Welcome to another edition of Here's an Idea podcast. I'm Sherry Trigg, editor and director of content for Medical Design Brief. Here's an Idea is a podcast presented by the editors of SAE Media Group that showcases today's most innovative technologies. So as Big Pharma is beginning a renewed focus on heart drugs, Biotricity is already ahead of that curve by providing supportive technologies. Biotricity delivers innovative, remote biometric monitoring solutions, including BioFlux, a high-precision, single-unit mobile cardiac telemetry device that provides real-time monitoring and transmission of ambulatory patients' ECG information. Biotricity was named one of Fast Company's 10 most innovative medical device companies of 2022. And Biotricity's BioHeart 24/7 heart monitoring device was named one of Time Magazine's best inventions of the year. Today, I'm talking with Waqas Ostadiq, CEO and founder of Biotricity. So, Waqas, can you tell us a little bit about your background and what inspired you to create technology for remote heart monitoring?
Absolutely, and thank you for having me, Sherry. So I think the catalyst for really going into monitoring for me was really my background in engineering. So as an engineer, I'm a specialist actually in sensor monitoring. So I built wireless communication for sensor networks, which is the idea of multiple sensors out in a remote environment and collecting data. One of the applications of that was the monitoring of individuals for, you know, quantified self and basically being able to make decisions on ourselves as individuals versus using environmental monitoring, which is, you know, making decisions based on what's going on with a building or an environment. So that is kind of where my background came. And then I ended up leaving, you know, my research and I ended up going into the cloud computing space. And so, you know, as all of our careers as entrepreneurs is kind of a winding road. But my background of this cloud and sensor got me to where I was following the industry and I was always interested in this idea of monitoring. And Fitbit and if you recall, Fitbit and Jawbone and these companies on the lifestyle started becoming very, very famous. And at that time, I saw that there was a gap because these devices just weren't accurate enough. And so the idea was that these companies were going to come in and disrupt healthcare. And I looked at it and I'm like, well, I don't know if that's really true. And then I looked at where the healthcare companies were and I saw that all of the care was digital. And I got fascinated with continuous glucose monitoring with Dexcom because my parents are both diabetic. And so long story short, I was looking at that continuous glucose monitoring space, got excited about it and said, you know what, the heart is the number one killer. It's the number one issue. It's the most expensive. People have already solved it for diabetes. I think that the future is really going to be in monitoring ourselves, and I think we should look at the heart. So that's kind of the catalyst and that winding path and got me where I am.
Wow, that's quite a great background to set you up for success. What are some of the components and technology behind clinical-grade wearable devices for remote heart monitoring?
Yeah, so in clinical-grade heart monitoring, and by the way, I'll get a little bit into the weeds because, you know, the term monitoring, which is very interesting in healthcare, is actually often misused. So we think of monitoring as like an active action, right? You're actively watching somebody or looking at something. And the reality is active monitoring. It's actually passive recording. And active monitoring is really the term telemetry. And so, and I bring this up because one aspect of heart monitoring is really collecting a really good ECG signal, right? So this is the electrical issue of your heart. I'm going to collect this and I'm going to collect your biometric signal. But I have to collect that signal in a way that I'm making sure that there's not a lot of noise. I'm making sure that that signal quality is at high level. And I have to collect it in a way where the electrical signal is not manipulated, if you will, right? And so once I collect it, that's one aspect, right? So how do I collect it? And that's the whole sensor of collecting the signal. And we really focus on that in Biotricity. Now, the other interesting thing about a heart is, you know, there's chambers to it, right? So there's a little bit more complexity than if you think of some of the other areas of your body that you want to monitor. So because of the chambers are pumping, and the function is a little bit different. So you want to get different views of the heart, if you think. And the way to think about that is when you are watching TV, if you kind of watch the TV at different angles, you'll find the color changes. So same kind mm-hmm. of thing. If you look at the heart from a different angle electrically, the angle of what you see on the electrical activity changes. So collecting one channel of your ECG is fine, but if you look at what the hospitals and the surgeons are doing in the hospital, it's 12, they're using 12 leads. Now, 12 leads is a lot of wire, so you don't want to do that. So in a home base and where you get 90% of your cases, you get three leads. So we really focus on Biotricity on getting three channels so you can get 90% of the cases solved. And getting three channels at that quality in a remote way where the patient is compliant is very difficult. So that's one piece. Second piece is, okay, I've got the signal. Now what am I supposed to do with it? And that's where the algorithms come in, right? And analyzing this data and determining what's normal and what's not normal. And by the way, that's a whole another interesting area because every patient is different, right? And right. Different genders, right? So male and female have different manifestations, people from different backgrounds, people from different ethnicities. So there's a lot of these different nuances, people with different diseases. So, you know, a diabetic patient of a certain, you know, weight versus a regular person of the same weight, right? You're going to have different impact on that ECG. So the analysis of what is considered out of range, that's where you really focus on to be able to information. Now, you can only depend on that if your collection point is clinically clinical quality ECG. So the sensor has to be really, really accurate, really, really clean. And if that's that clinical quality is there and FDA defines that, then you can apply the algorithms to make decisions. So that's essentially the world of monitoring and how it works, right? You need the clinical quality signal, and then you need the mathematics, AI, and the algorithms to help you focus on which piece is most important.
Wow, that's very interesting and complex, and yet you made it sound so simple. So how do cardiologists and patients use these devices?
Absolutely. So the use cases, and I'll go through a couple different use cases because, you know, we talked about BioHeart, which was a consumer product for Time magazines in your intro, and then we talk about BioFlux, which is our telemetry device, right? So when a patient is coming, they're complaining of something. I've got some issue. I don't know what's going on. Maybe I woke up, I had some tightness in my chest, some sort of symptom, right? They end up getting in front of the cardiologist, and the cardiologist is basically saying, I really have no idea what's going on. I need to figure out what's going on. So they need a diagnostic device that is collecting the signal. And I'm going to, of course, again, oversimplify. Think of your heart as, you know, like your house. You can have an electrical issue or a plumbing issue, right? So he'll use a diagnostic monitor like our BioFlux to monitor and collect this information around your heart. And so to determine, is it an electrical or a plumbing issue, right? And so in that case, the doctor's prescribing the device and he's using it or she's using it to determine what's going on with the patient. The patient's use case there is they wear it, right? So and the BioFlux or the BioTray monitor, these are, you know, sticky patch based devices. So you'll snap them into these sticky electrodes. Think of them like a Band-Aid, and then you'll slap them over your chest and they'll stick to it. And the stickiness is important because you need to reduce the noise and you need to make sure that the quality of the signal, you're getting as much clear data as possible to enable that cardiologist to make that decision. So you wear it around for, let's say, 7 days, right? Our typical cardiologist is prescribing these on average between 7 to 10 days. So because heart issues are intermittent, you're talking 23 hours a day, one hour recharging for 7 to 10 days, right? So that's the amount of data. So you can imagine how much information is coming in. So the patient is wearing this device and they know that at the end of this information is going to go to the doctor and the doctor's look at the data and determine, you know, what's going on. Now, in this process, we do something very unique, which is what happens if you are going to have a heart attack or a stroke while you're wearing the device. This is where we created a smart monitor, right? Mm-hmm. So typically today, you'd have to wait 2 weeks after you return the device to the physician for a report. And that can be dangerous if you're a high-risk patient because you can have a heart attack while you're wearing it. And so what our device does is it's a smart device. So it's actually actively monitoring you. And so when you go out of route, it'll take that piece of data, push it to the physician and say, hey, we think is going to have a problem because they're out of range. And then the physician can get that patient into the hospital or do a diagnosis. So we are a real-time smart monitoring device with our algorithms and our AI looking at all of this information saying, hey, maybe we think this could be a risk situation. And so there's tens of thousands of patients who we have identified as, you know, before they even had a heart attack and a stroke. So they even avoided a heart attack and a stroke because we found the issue early. And there's, you know, tens and thousands of other patients where we caught the issue because it was sudden. It was not something that had a precursor to it. But we got them into the hospital so that they could actually have the response in a fast way so that the impact on their heart was less severe than if, you know, there was no device on them that had actually communicated it, right? So that's the use case for that, the monitoring piece and the diagnostic piece and our telemetry device. When you go into the BioHeart product, so that's a little bit different. So now in this case, you have a patient, you've diagnosed them, right, on the BioFlux or on our BioTray product. So patient in, had the device, they went through work for 7 days, and they brought it back. Doctor said, okay, I know what's going on. Here, I'm going to give you a pill, right, an antiarrhythmic. I'm using a very simple case. I mean, some of them need surgery, right?
Right.
Now you release that patient, but they're chronic, right? So 6 months later, they're going to come back. They're going to get back on a diagnostic device to see, are you stable? Are you not stable? Is it better? Is it not better? But in between, what does the patient have? Nothing. Mm-hmm. Maybe a 30-second ECG off of an Apple Watch, but we just talked about what does a physician need to diagnose a patient. They need 7 days of 23 hours of continuous monitoring. An Apple Watch gives you 30 seconds of ECG. That's not full unless you're a symptomatic patient, which is a very small percentage. So again, you need a device that's essentially a continuous heart monitor, like you diabetics have a continuous glucose monitor. And so that's what we realized was there's a gap. These patients get diagnosed on our product, they're given a medication or surgery, and then they really have no tool available to them. And so we created the BioHeart to fill that gap. We took our diagnostic technology and we created a continuous monitor, which now it doesn't need sticky electrodes because it's a personal device. You don't have to return it to the physician. You can wear it forever. It'll record years of your data. But it's using the same kind of concept that if it goes above and out of range, you can take that summary so that when you go back to the doctor 6 months later and the doctor's like, well, how have you been feeling? You're like, well, I've been feeling really good, but here's some of my data that's been below or above the range that you can take a look at. And so we created basically a new market, right, for that concept. And so now we've essentially created continuous heart monitoring using the ability that we learned on the diagnostic side, which actually showed us that, hey, we're seeing the same patients coming back in on our diagnostic device 6 months in between, you know, they really have no tool.
So, I mean, as you've obviously pointed out, heart disease is a leading cause of death. It's an extensive condition to treat. Do you see these devices over time helping to solve these issues or address these issues?
You know, absolutely. So I think that, you know, we did an impact report that we published a couple of weeks ago. So there's a couple of different areas, right? So one is, you know, and we'll go to the most extreme cases, right? If you have an event and you have a stroke or a heart attack, you have 3 months of rehab, 6 months of rehab, you have a you're now at much higher risk for having another stroke or another heart attack, depending on how late the response was, right? The later the response, so the longer it takes somebody to stabilize you, the more damage you suffer, right? So the first line of defense is put them on a monitor that can alert somebody so you can respond faster, so that the impact on that individual, you know, the cost on the system as well as the cost on them and their lives is less, right? The next step is, well, let's go even better, where we want to do predictive monitoring, right? So predictive is saying, okay, before something happens, let's get those patients. We're doing that today, right? Because we're identifying the changes early on enough that we can get those patients in. And so that means that avoiding a stroke, which, you know, one stroke event costs you $250,000, right, on the healthcare system, right? So if you can avoid a stroke, that's a huge savings. So, you know, a diagnostic device, doing a diagnostic study and responding, you're talking $850 for a diagnostic study plus going into the doctor's office. So you're talking maximum cost of, let's say, $2,500 versus $250,000. So that's a great area to reduce costs. And then the third one is, let's try to catch patients before they're even at risk, right? Like before, and get them engaged and enabled. And that's where you need something that's cheap, usable, more lifestyle, personal oriented, like our BioHeart product, which can then say, okay, I think your biometrics and your numbers, you at a higher risk, so I'm going to give you this. This is now you're talking about, you know, $50-$60 a month that insurance is paying, so $500 a year. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to get you healthier so that you never end up in the at-risk population. So, you know, it's a long way of answering your question, but I think that there's hundreds of millions to, you know, a few billion dollars of savings that are available if we can apply these technologies in the different, in those three different stages, you know, at a national level and actually at a global level, because the problem is not just in the United States, it's every country in the world, pretty much heart disease is the number one killer.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is something that it seems like it's time. The industry is ready for it and needs it. So I want to wrap up with a question about artificial intelligence. It's been a buzzword in all things technology. What role do you feel AI has in the future of these devices and ultimately better outcomes for patients?
It's an excellent question. And, you know, I think the like you said, AI is a huge buzzword. And I think that one of the mistakes that is happening and the way we think about AI is we're not really evaluating it in the different use cases, right? So I'll break that out. And so I think one aspect of AI, which is a low-hanging fruit, is that a lot of costs on the system, issues on the system, is patient compliance, right? Supporting the patient to engage. And this is really, we think about it as simplistic, but it's your patient has a question. They want a quick answer, right? They don't want to go call the nurse, wait on hold and stuff. So they want a quick answer. They want somebody to remind them to do something, right? I think I was reading a statistic on research that, you know, most patients forget their dosage and medications within, you know, a couple days of leaving their doctor's office. So this is why they have to keep on reading their labels and medication adherence is a huge, huge cost, $385 million a year on the system. So AI can serve as this first line support, right? This is an interactive, you know, chat, interactive messaging. They can even do calling and you can even do, you know, basic, you know, level one type support. And I think that's an interesting area that we can use. Now, I don't think it's going to help everybody, but it's certainly going to help a big chunk of the population, because you have the people who are self-motivated, you have the individuals that need that support, and then the individuals just are not compliant. So at least the first two would really benefit from something like that. The other place where AI can be used, which is a completely different space, because that's more like, you know, chat, engagement, understanding how people are doing it, what is the content around there, and that's more like regenerative AI will be very helpful there, right? Then you go into, okay, well, I want to predict, right? I want to look at what is going in and out of range. And this is where deep data and machine learning and that flavor of AI comes in. So I was telling you about how our telemetry devices identifying if something is going out of range, right? And how earlier can we, how much earlier can we identify that, right? Can we identify it like 3 stages earlier, 2 stages earlier? Can we get more specific? Can we identify based on different demographics, right? And this is where deep data and machine learning are really helpful, right? Because they can predict or at least support prediction way before something occurs, right? And so that is really around that deep data and machine learning piece of it. And then the third area of AI, which I think is another place that can be applied, is really in supporting the physicians in making decisions or focusing their eyes on the what's most important, right? And so this is where, you know, deep data is really looking at zeros and ones. There's AI that's non-relational database, which is essentially like, think about it as like a virtual cardiologist, right? So having a virtual cardiologist who's read all of the cardiology textbooks and has all the cardiology information on its fingertips as a resource to a cardiologist is very, very valuable, provided that they're looking at the information the same way that a cardiologist would look at, right? And so that's where that becomes a very interesting thing as a clinical support tool. So, you know, we're going from patient support to, you know, diagnostic support to clinical support. And I think AI can play a role in each of those areas, but obviously a different type of AI and a different style of AI for each of those use cases.
Oh, that is fascinating. Walkus, thank you for joining us today for this podcast. I'm sure our audience will better understand the need for this technology in the future of healthcare, and I'm personally excited to see where it's going to go next.
We are as well, and we hope to continue to lead the charge that way. And thank you for having me. And any other questions or anything else that the audience comes up with, you know, feel free to reach out to us or have them reach out to us. We're always available and happy to answer any questions.
Excellent. Thank you so much. If you'd like to provide feedback on this episode or suggest future guests, please email me at sherry.trigg@saemediagroup.com. You can listen to this podcast at medicaldesignbriefs.com/podcast or on your favorite podcast app such as Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Thank you for listening and watch for more coverage of an exciting new technologies on Here's an Idea.